Welcome to the Digital Health Insights Podcast, where NZ Hit CEO Scott Arrell brings you key thought leaders to share their experience, views, and vision on all things digital health and more. Full tech enablement is essential for creating world-class health systems, and Scott's guests discuss how this can be achieved, the challenges that need addressing, the opportunities it creates, and the benefits delivered to health, disability, and social care services in New Zealand and worldwide.
Hey there. Thanks for tuning into the show and taking time to spend with my guest and me today. It's such a pleasure to have Catherine Jones on the show, as she and I were work colleagues a few years ago, and we've maintained our friendship ever since. Catherine doesn't usually like to talk about herself or what she does, but I've forced her out into the open in this interview, as her story demonstrates why she is one of the top leaders in New Zealand's NGO sector, and how she has made such a big difference to the lives of literally thousands in this country since moving here from Scotland. Their loss was most definitely our gain. Catherine has been in her current role as CEO of the Laura Ferguson Brain Injury Trust for the past 8 years, and in that time has transformed that organization into a significant provider of care and rehabilitation services to people with brain and spinal injuries. I'm not going to steal her thunder by revealing anything further in her introduction, except to say that I'm so proud of her achievements, despite the fact that she's a staunch supporter of the Crusaders rugby team. Sorry, Catherine, couldn't help but chuck that one in there. Hey, make sure to tap the subscribe and share buttons on your favorite podcast app so as many people as possible can listen to Catherine's story. You can also get in touch directly with me by sending an email to ceo@nzhit.nz, and also check out our website at nzhit.nz. There's heaps of information, resources, blogs, and events that you can find out about all for free. Well, Catherine is waiting, so let's go have a chat. Hi there, Catherine. Thanks for joining us today. How's things going for you down in beautiful Christchurch?
Oh, thank you, Scott. Nice to be here. No, beautiful Christchurch. It's beautiful this morning. It's lovely and sunny down here, bit of a frosty start, but that's usual for Canterbury. No, things are going quite good, actually. We've recovered from the initial lockdown period with COVID-19 with our organisation. During lockdown, we had half our business was operating because we were an essential service, and half our business, all of our community services were effectively closed down. So that was a very interesting period. But I think we were very, very lucky to have a whole range of staff, therapists who were able to not do their normal day-to-day business, but actually support us within our residential and our rehabilitation services, which was fantastic for the people that we support who were effectively locked in for about 4 to 5 weeks. So yeah, so we've kind of come through that phase, which has been really interesting. And what we're finding now is actually some of the staff are calling it the sugar rush with our referrals for our community rehabilitation services are going through the roof. And I think that's possibly reflective of people who weren't going to see their GPs or, during that whole lockdown period, and, level 3, level 2 as well. People weren't doing their normal range of activities and possibly not seeking help when they needed to. So we have got a massive backlog, it seems, of people needing support in the community. So that's been very interesting.
Yeah, and well, for context as well, because I've told the listeners a little bit about you before we started this, at the start of this recording, I should say. But so Laura Ferguson Brain Injury Trust, as it's now known, is give us some context about, sort of its history and what you, where it's come from, what you do.
Great. Well, the Laura Ferguson Brain Injury Trust, we're an independent charity. We've been in Canterbury for approximately 40 years. Laura Ferguson was the wife of the then Governor General in the sort of late 60s, I think it was. And she was quite a visionary woman, and she set up the Laura Ferguson Trust in the early 70s, because she didn't like to see lots of young people with disabilities living in aged care facilities, which was all that was available in those days. So effectively, the trust has grown and developed over time, and we support probably around 500, 600 people a day across the South Island. We provide residential services, rehabilitation services, and assessment services for people with traumatic acquired brain injury, spinal injury, and other disabilities. So the trust has expanded quite significantly from its individual beginnings, which was a residential care home in Ilam in Christchurch. So we have about 200 staff that we employ who work across all of our services. The majority of those are therapists, allied health therapists, and we also have a range of registered nurses and rehabilitation assistants and support workers that enable us to do all the work that we do. So yeah, quite extensive services, and we kind of talk about it as from that cradle to grave. It's a bit cliched, but we support people from babies and children who've had concussions to people who have lifelong quite serious injuries and disabilities. So that whole spectrum. And we're the only one in the country that does that. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, and as a result, you say you've got 200 staff, quite specialised, aren't they? Specifically for the services you provide.
Yes, they are. So we have quite a large psychology team. We have neuropsychologists who do quite complex assessments and support people with traumatic brain injuries. We have physiotherapists, occupational therapists, speech and language therapists, a whole plethora of specialist staff ready to put that wraparound service around individuals who, as I said, it could be somebody who's been hurtling down the Port Hills on their mountain bike and knocks their head and has a mild concussion to a major motor vehicle accident, when somebody is going to require lifelong support from us. So they have specialist skills.
Yeah, that's right. And you've taken it. How long have you been in this role now?
I've been here for about
dare I ask?
8 years now, believe it or not. Yes, it has. It's gone very quickly.
Yeah, and we should tell the listeners, you and I used to work together. We were back in home-based care days and community nursing, so we were colleagues at Healthcare New Zealand, and it was always a pleasure to work with you, by the way, and I'm not just saying that because you're my guest today.
you were north and I was south, Scott.
We covered the country
very well.
Yeah, every now and again you let me come down to Christchurch and spend some time down there, didn't you?
Yes, only when the Crusaders won.
That's right. Well, in that case, it was all the time then.
Yeah. So,
but I remember when you started there, so 8 years ago, I sort of lost track of how long that was. And, I would say that Laura Ferguson Trust Canterbury, as it was known, and also what you are now, Laura Ferguson Brain Injury Trust, it's kind of very understated, which kind of probably reflects where the organization has come from, the trust has come from, but even also for yourself, having worked with you, the brilliant stuff that you would do, you would always quickly deflect it to others your ability to develop service offerings or service development and delivery and operate a business the way that you do is fantastic. So, but it probably is that understated situation where a lot of people even in Christchurch wouldn't know just how extensive amount of work that you do, would they?
Yep, no, you're absolutely right, Scott. And I think I keep talking about we're the South Island's best kept secret, really. And it's not really normally a problem, because most of our customers are, obviously we deliver our services via contracts with ACC, the Ministry of Health, the District Health Boards. But we're about to launch into a new phase for the trust. We're about to launch into a capital fundraising campaign in the new year. And clearly, if we're looking for people to donate to the fantastic services that we do to help us rebuild our facilities, which is the primary purpose of the campaign, people need to know who we are and what we do. So what we've been preparing over the last 6 months is our rebrand strategy and quite a large public awareness campaign. We're very lucky, being a charitable trust, that we've been donated funding from the likes of MediaWorks and Rata Foundation to support us in this public awareness phase of our campaign, hence the rebranding. So we're kind of owning that space in terms of brain injury, which is predominantly what we do. And hopefully people will start to hear a lot more about what we, who we are and what we do as part of the preparation for our fundraising campaign next year.
Yeah, and that's a good point, actually, for listeners. So really started 40 years ago as the Laura Ferguson Trust Canterbury, and up until just probably in the last month or so, that have continued to be called that. And now, though, you're officially the Laura Ferguson Brain Injury Trust. So
yes.
And that's obviously that raising awareness, raising you know, capital raising, all that sort of area. That's all part of it, isn't it? And kind of, you know, I'm sensing that you're positioning yourself and the trust for the future. And you know, I think the amount of number of people that you're supporting and helping has grown significant in the time you've been there. Yeah. And I'd say it's going to continue to grow over the next few years, isn't it?
Yes, well, hopefully, because traditionally, I'll just speak a little bit about our residential services, because traditionally we had quite a large facility that was built in Ireland that housed or provided accommodation for about 40 individuals. So fast forward from the 70s to the 2020, that's not the type of accommodation that younger people with disability want to live in. So what we're looking at doing is expanding some of our residential, community residential housing options as well. So next year and the year after, we'll see quite a bit of movement in that. And what we really want to focus on the redevelopment is building a hub, a centre of excellence, as it were, for the South Island, where people who've had brain injury or have other injuries such as spinal injury or disabilities can come, and you know, all of the services and our supports are all in one place. At the moment, we're a little bit scattered across the city with the range of services that we offer, but we do want to become that centre of excellence for everything related to the brain. Yeah.
Mm. And a really great example of what I often say is it's, you know, healthcare and health services is about great people doing great things with other people. And, you know, it's, you know, you've got 200 staff, you've got a lot of people you're looking after, and you're just looking all the time, you know, how can you add more value, help more people? And that's fantastic. Part of that, and we should talk a bit about digital, because, yep, you know, because of the name of this podcast, but you know, you and I could talk about what you do forever, couldn't we? But,
I know.
To support your great people to do great stuff with other people, you went into a bit of a adventure last year where you implemented a whole new digital system, mm-hmm, to support your system, your people, and your clients. And so why don't you tell us a bit about that? Because one thing that I think you're particularly proud of is it was achieved on time and achieved within budget. And I know in health and tech, to do that, you know, that's you could retire now and you could just live on that for the rest of your life, couldn't you?
Absolutely. Well, just a bit of background is, so the since I started, the Laura Ferguson Brain Injury Trust grew quite significantly through acquisition as well as organic growth and new contract development. So one of the things that we ended up with in 2018 was a realisation that we had six disparate IT systems operating, and none of them spoke to each other. We had a lot of frustration from staff, we had a lot of duplication, just all of the usual factors when organisations, to the size and scale that we become, our infrastructure, particularly our technology infrastructure, hadn't kept up the pace. So I think what we realised very quickly was that we needed to implement one technology platform that would manage all of our client activity, all of our billable activity as well, because we're fundamentally operate on a fee-for-service model. So we needed something that not only met our client needs in terms of goal setting, planning, rehabilitation planning, but also met that billable expectation and our contractual requirements with the probably 20 plus contracts that we have with different government funders. So not an easy task. We did quite a lot of due diligence on the preferred supplier, and Wild Bamboo were certainly the organisation that we chose, and they've been fantastic, just full stop at the end of that. They have been great. One of the things, I think, in terms of the budget, we implemented the whole entire system across, you know, 200 staff on multiple sites for under 200,000. But it was a bit of a stroke of genius, because I always say, you've got to look at your own team for your resources. We have a member of staff who used to be a global program manager for one of a big technology firm. She worked in Australia and the UK, who had a bit of a career change a few years ago and decided to become a speech and language therapist. And I just happened to know that fact. So what was fantastic was being able to second one of your own staff to pretty much run the whole project with a huge amount of expertise at, you know, that minimum cost. We didn't have to look externally for that. because we had it in-house. We did have to bring in a business analyst because, you know, our business processes were all over the place, and that's quite an extensive piece of work we had to undertake initially. But, yeah, I was very, very lucky that internally we had that that expertise. It was a bit of magic there. So, yeah, so we implemented the whole system within 12 months with the support of Wild Bamboo. And thank goodness we did, because, you know, with COVID coming in, we fully implemented in June, July last year across all of our business units. And, you know, a typical charity, we don't tend to have a huge amount of project funding or a huge amount of cash that we can throw at things like that if they do go over budget. But we pretty much implemented the entire system across the organisation and went, boom, there you go, off you go, you know, to our staff. So basically we've been spending the last 12 months figuring out, you know, what we need to do now to really refine the system based around everybody's needs. But, you know, in the scheme of things and in my experience, it's been a really fantastic implementation, I have to say. So that's pretty much where we've been at. But thankfully, having that system, you know, going into lockdown, all of our staff had the immediate capability to work from home, access all of their client management system, do their billing, their time tracking. So it was a very, very smooth process to enable the workforce to be entirely mobile. Mm-hmm. We do have a remote desktop server that we did, you know, most of our staff can access from home. So, yeah, but I think we were just one of the lucky ones that had all of our infrastructure in place, and we're ready to go when we faced what we did in March, April. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and you can't kind of underemphasize that, and you mentioned being a charity. And so, you know, that whole working with Wild Bamboo, you know, and they understand the charity sector, don't they? So mm-hmm. That would have been a help as well. And I guess also the other critical part, I'm sure, that, you know, you were then able to access your reporting. You know, you mentioned you've got, you know, multiple contracts with various agencies. So reporting back to them, particularly at COVID time, then because everybody, I know there was quite a bit of floundering was going on, you know, where ACC getting their heads around, you know, funding for telehealth and other services. It was a crazy time for everybody, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
So I'm sure for you and your board, probably gave your board a lot of comfort as well, that you had your finger on the pulse. Yeah,
it did. And I think even with them, you know, moving forward with contact tracing, you know, having a client management system that's comprehensive, that each therapist can see what every other therapist is doing across the organisation, it makes life an awful lot easier and less cumbersome. It reduces a lot of duplication. Because one of the benefits was that, you know, we'd have an occupational therapist who was assessing a client for their wheelchair and seating needs. And we had another occupational therapist who was creating strategies to manage that person's brain injury. But neither of them knew that each other were working within that individual client. And Scott, as you know, clients know that, you know, Catherine comes in and sees them, but they've no idea who Catherine is, who she works for, or what her role is sometimes. So having the therapists with that visibility now across, you know, when multiple people are working with our clients has been absolutely fantastic from a client's perspective as much as anything.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, you and I have worked on, I'd like love to say that in our past working together that we were just so highly successful, weren't we, in all the change management processes that we ever put in place. And I think back to those times and think, gosh, we cut our teeth and we got a lot of lessons taught to us, didn't we? And clearly, you know, you've taken those lessons on board and been able to do that at Laura Ferguson. So, and getting that staff member that you had, you know, I'm sure that didn't just happen by chance. No, knowing that you probably would have been storing away in your mind when you were even interviewing her for the role. This could come in handy one day.
<That's nice. laughs> And she loved it as well. It was quite nice. Yes. It was a great change for her. It was a short term secondment, and she's back to doing what she loves doing now again, which is the speech and language therapy. But it was so fantastic to have that skill base.
Yes, good. And I should mention for transparency for listeners that Wild Bamboo is a member of NZ HIT as well. And, you know, I think you and I talked 2 or 3 years ago. I think you were, I remember you actually kind of not literally, but you were pulling your hair out with these multiple systems that you were trying to figure out. Gosh, one doesn't talk to the other. How can this ever be any good for us in the future? And I think we talked about wild bamboo back then, didn't we? And then I'm really pleased that it's moved on from there. And I had confidence that they would be able to deliver what you needed. And it's really pleasing for me, and I'm sure for them, that they've been able to do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's other businesses. I mean, we did do quite a bit of due diligence, and we did look at the market and what was available. But I think Wild Bamboo, because they have that experience working with small to medium, I mean, we're medium to large, you know, size charities and not-for-profits, they just understand the size and scale of what's possible, because you'll be asking them for the world, and they understand what you actually can afford, which is, you know, which makes the conversation a lot easier. You know, so I do think for them having that experience, it made a big difference.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm going to go a bit sidetracked here, because I should have mentioned this at the start, because your lovely accent is not actually just because you're from Canterbury, of course, although, you know, it's sort of had the edges knocked off it since you've been living there, and I know you're a proud Cantabrian now. Yeah, I've seen you wearing that black and red eye patch at times. So, but you come from Scotland originally?
Yes, I do. I come from Perth in Scotland, and a lot of people say, you don't sound Australian. I said, no, the original Perth in Scotland, the one that named the one in Australia. So I come from there, and but I haven't lived in Scotland probably for the last 18, 19 years now. I did do a bit of travelling in my career, worked in Canada, worked in London and Australia as well. So, yeah, but I was kind of came back to New Zealand. My husband's from Temuka, of all places. So, the red and black is a feature colour scheme in our house. But I love my time in New Zealand. I love living here. It's a great place to be.
Yeah, of course, your family back in Scotland, they think you've got this amazing Kiwi accent now, don't they?
Oh, I know. When I say yes instead of yes, that's certainly gotta get a bit of a ribbing for that. But I need to go back home again for a little bit of a fix, strengthen my accent up again.
That's right. Yeah, no, I just thought I'd better put that context in there. And you know, the thing that frustrates me, I suppose, even now still, but even when we were working that, those crusaders were just always winning everything. But of course, it was only because they were importing so many players from elsewhere in the country. It's kind of this hybrid model of rugby player that Canterbury seems to get. It's really good, isn't it, that the rest of the country lets you have our best players, you know?
That's right. Well, that was one of the things I learned very quickly when I came to New Zealand was living in Temuka for the first 12 months being here. Everybody either played rugby, coached rugby, managed rugby, did the food for the rugby, or just drank after the rugby game. So it was quite an interesting, you know, sort of picture of New Zealand that I got when I first arrived.
Yeah, it would have been particularly coming from Perth, because it would have been what, curling and football.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, and Johnson and curling as well. We're quite famous for our curling teams there. We've got some world champions from Perth. So, and Olympic champions too.
Yeah. It's one of the heartlands of curling, isn't it?
It is, yes.
I'd love listeners haven't tuned in to talk about rugby, although my regular listeners will realize that once I get on that track, it's a bit hard to get me off there. If we talk about what does the future look like here? You know, it's and I said to you earlier, say 5 years, if you were in a time capsule and hit the button and you were in the year 2025, and no one's going to hold you to this, of course, by the way, Catherine, because you know what I'm like. I'm always talking about what things are going to look like in 10 years' time. But if you said to me in 10 years' time it didn't happen, Scott, well, I just deny I ever said it. You know? So this is your opportunity to talk about, when you think about healthcare, if we go broader than just what you currently do, your healthcare and where things are heading, what's your thoughts?
That's a huge big question, Scott. So 2025, with what's going on at the moment, I would have probably answered it slightly differently maybe, 12 months ago. I think the pace of change may slow a little bit in some areas, but I think the pace of change in healthcare may speed up in other areas. I suppose that's a bit of a bland answer, but I think the impact of COVID-19 on our healthcare sector probably hasn't been, I don't know, considered yet in terms of the longer term impacts, because nobody really knows what the outcome of immunisation or treatment is going to be in the long term. So that definitely will play a factor in terms of what the future looks like, but I know that we will continue to have to do more for less. The growth in the services I see, certainly over the last 8 years that I've been working for this organisation in rehabilitation and long-term support, I certainly see that things will need to be more efficient. We're going to have providers of health are going to have to offer multiple options. One size won't fit all for people, particularly within community healthcare. I'm just thinking, you know, people are surviving accidents now where they wouldn't 10 years ago. People are, the treatments are improving, equipment's improving, technology's improving. So in terms of health providers such as us within community health, we're going to have to build facilities and services that are built around those factors. And obviously from an economic perspective, the government's going to have to cope with that growth in demand, because it will be there. It may be for slightly different things, but it certainly will be a growth in demand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. And you and I have talked about this in the past, and along with lots of others, where, you know, how do we meet that growth and that demand? You know, because it's what I've talked about, that what I call it the headcount paradigm, which is the problem being, and it's been the problem for a long time, is more people needing more care. Mm-hmm. And in the past few years and into the future, it's more people needing even more care. The solution is, you know, we can't just keep throwing headcount at that, you know, more people to deliver more care, because there isn't enough people to deliver more care. So then it's how do we do that effectively and efficiently? Because we know that it hasn't been working for the last 10 years.
No.
And I suppose that's my little plug for health technology and digital health in particular, where you've just experienced it yourself by putting in the system that you've put in. I'm sure you're experiencing the increase in effectiveness. You talked about, you've got clients now that actually, that you've got people looking after them, different people. Now they're joined up. They actually know what each one's doing. Mm-hmm. And then also your efficiencies. They're around, okay, well, how can I be as efficient as I possibly can? Because I need to be anyway, but my funder now expects me to be.
One of the things we're looking at to try and address at the moment is using virtual reality technology within therapy treatments. In terms of efficiency, if you imagine, me sending a physiotherapist and an occupational therapist down to Twizel for a one-hour session with a client who lives in quite a remote and rural area who doesn't have any Wi-Fi coverage, so you can't undertake telehealth with that individual. But we are developing at the moment, in partnership with Callaghan Innovations and Cerebral Fix, a virtual reality game, which will be a therapeutic tool in terms of brain injury rehab. And it will be able to be used offline by people in remote rural areas. And it stops, that whole inefficiency of sending, two staff at huge cost a whole day to provide 1 hour of therapy in rural areas. And it will have, technology like that will have far-reaching effects. And if you go to the sleep centre in Christchurch, if you're doing some sleep apnea testing, they send you out the equipment, you plug it in, you switch it on, you do your test. We need to think a lot more about how we can use technology in that way as well, just to reduce those inefficiencies, particularly with the New Zealand demographic and the South Island with that rural aspect as well.
Yes, yeah, and I totally agree. I know the work that Cerebral Fix are doing in conjunction with Callaghan, and that's just the potential for that is enormous, frankly. Mm. As you say, just being able to help people in obviously virtual reality, add to that augmented reality, which creates a whole another dimension. And then you've got your training, of course, as well for your staff. So you start to be able to, the sort of remote training, quite specific and you know, you can have those courses, you know, obviously using the virtual reality to do that. You know,
that's right.
Great. Yeah. And sort of, again, you know, sorry, listeners, to hark back to when you and I worked together, Catherine, but, you know, and even before that, we wanted to do things like that, but technology was the problem because, you know, it was too expensive. You know, someone could build this stuff for you, but you had to have very deep pockets. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and being from Scotland, my father was from Scotland, you sort of, you had to open the wallet and let all those moths out to pay for it, you know. but now, if we fast forward to now, tech's not the problem anymore, is it?
No, it's finding the right model to fit the technology around so it actually delivers what you want it to deliver. One of the other areas we're looking at is within corrections using virtual reality technology. Because if you imagine, if you've been in prison, you've got a brain injury, which 70% of them do, that we're seeing. How on earth do you practice for real life if you've been locked up for 10 years and you're not allowed to go to the supermarket, you're not allowed to go to work and income to get your benefit, you're not allowed to go into the Housing New Zealand office? So how on earth do you practice those things in a safe environment before you leave and you know, so you don't reoffend and end up back inside again? Mm-hmm. So virtual reality gives us the opportunity to, you know, to go beyond a lot of, and work within a lot of areas which will have long-term benefits as well for people. So
Yeah, and that's a very good point. And just finishing up on that is, so, and you've told me this before, because it's brain injury, spinal injury is not an area that, you know, I've had anything to do with, frankly, and that's the work you do is incredible. But you, I think it's you that said this to me before. So someone could have a brain injury, but they look like you and I. They don't necessarily have to show an effect of a brain injury or even a spinal injury. Probably a bit more with that, isn't it? But
yes.
So the treatments and your services and how you look after those sort of people is quite it's very specialized, isn't it? And
it is.
It becomes quite specific to each person, doesn't it?
It does, because it does affect everybody in different ways. You know, managing fatigue is one of the top areas that our team work with individuals, because I think people think that you know if you have a mild to moderate brain injury or a moderate to severe brain injury, your brain doesn't recover, it doesn't repair. What we help you and your brain do is work out new pathways around the bit that's been damaged. So what we focus on is building strategies or giving you the confidence to have strategies around managing, you know, fatigue, which is huge. So, you know, not draining your brain, we call it, and keeping that battery, your brain battery, topped up all the time, because that then enables you to function as normal as you possibly can. And it's when you do get fatigued that you become impulsive, your mood changes, you can't make decisions, you can't, you know, walk into a supermarket and scan the shelves with your eyes because that's quite painful. So there's loads of different areas that we work with individuals to build those strategies so they can live a normal life as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's a really good way to finish up, because I wanted you to be able to emphasize that. I think when we're talking about the area that you work in and the people that you look after, it's not one size fits all at all. And
no.
I think we need, as a society in a way, I think we need to probably, it's great that you're going to be raising awareness of what you do, and because I think that has got to help, I think, because there's a lot of things occur and I just don't think we understand at times why they're occurring with somebody. Why is somebody behaving that way, you know? And you're dealing with that every day.
That's right. Yes, cool. No, we do.
Hey, it's been an absolute privilege and a pleasure. Thank you, Catherine, for spending your time. I know how busy you are, and I also know how reluctant you were to do this interview, because again, coming back to you don't want to be the front person, but you do such a fantastic job. So it's been great to have you on the show today, and thank you, listeners, for joining us. I know you would have enjoyed this. Get in touch with me if you want to ask any questions. So that's just the email ceo@nzhit.nz. And hey, you can do me a favor too. You just you're listening to this on your favorite podcast app, whichever it is. Make sure to subscribe, make sure to share. Let's spread the love. Thanks, everybody, and thank you, Catherine.
Thank you, Scott. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Digital Health Insights podcast with Scott Arrell. Make sure to subscribe and join us again for more news, views, and stories from key health and tech leaders. For more information, please head to our website at www.nzhit.nz, where you'll find links to resources, news, events, and much more.